For the past 25 to 30 years, gaming has been the R&D of the future of every technology. If you want to find out where the technology is, look at the scrappy developers that have used this hardware and have driven more industries from every aspect.
Welcome to Interconnected. Today we are going to be diving into the world of gaming, from VR in our living rooms to cloud stream blockbusters on our phones. Gaming has really become this $200 billion global phenomenon, bigger than movies and music combined. But it's more than just entertainment. Gaming is now the testbed for the future of the internet, driving advances in networking, computing, and digital identity that will shape how we work, learn, and even connect.
So to help us unpack how gaming became one of the world's most powerful innovation engines, we're joined by Roy O'Brien and Wesley Koh. Roy is the CEO of Expansia and former CTO of Haiti, as well as Amazon's former game tech chief evangelist. Wesley is the CEO and founder of Ubitus, a cloud gaming pioneer bringing console-quality games to virtually any device through streaming partnerships with companies like Nintendo and major telecoms.
Royal, Wesley, I'm so glad to have you join us. I just want to dive in and we can start talking about some of the things, because one of the things I'm actually interested in talking about is how has the gaming industry evolved? Royal, if you don't mind starting.
Sure. I mean, the gaming industry has been very interesting, but if you look at what's happening, it's ingrained as part of the culture. Working with other kids that are playing games, they're actually going and watching people play games. Not because it's just the most amazing thing. They want to play the game. They want to play the game the best way it can be played. And these are the people who are spending tons and tons of hours playing those games. So you have these tips and tricks and best builds and meta, and you learn more about the game that way because there's no instruction manuals to these and they're vast. So the bottom line is that it is the preferred medium of interactivity across the board. And that's something that's not going to change, because the reality is for the past 25 to 30 years, gaming has been the R&D of the future of every technology. If you want to find out where the technology is, look at the scrappy developers that have used this hardware and have driven more industries from every aspect.
Yeah, I can speak firsthand before this call to prep for it. I've said to my wife it was research, but I was actually just playing on the Xbox and kind of getting ready for this call. And it's kind of interactive as well. It's like you watch a Twitch stream for an hour and then you'll get an in-game content drop into your game. So it's kind of keeping that retention on Twitch and people like myself to watch it as well. So,
and what's your world looking like with gaming, Wesley? Like, what are you seeing the ecosystem evolve into?
Yeah. So what we do, cloud gaming, is more like adding the interactivity. You know, watching someone play the video game, and then if you really like this broadcaster, you can actually send an invite and join him, play with him. So in order to do that cross-device, cross-region, so what we're doing is host all the game rendering, all the 3D engine in the cloud with cloud GPU, and then like a Netflix or game, and streaming the render output of those fancy graphics as a video to end user device. Could be a phone, could be a browser, could be Switch.
So if we go back to talking about GPUs for a second, do you mind like giving our audience a take on that as well? Like the innovations that are coming up with real-time rendering?
So GPU, in short, by the way, is called graphics processing unit.
It's a specialized piece of hardware that is very, very good at doing a lot of computations on 3D and math. It has to be done very fast, in parallel, structured. And that's what makes it, you know, really magical. And you know, back in the days, to be honest, games are what actually allowed GPUs to become something of reality. Because without games, you wouldn't have a GPU. It wouldn't be a real reason.
Yeah. So back to rendering. So today, nowadays, video games, I think 60 frames per second is minimum. Okay, and good one can go 90 or 120. And then Royal mentioned, minimum 720p, 1080p. And then if you really have luxury, powerful console and TV at home, you can go like 4K. So that's how we, for playability, if you really want to feel to play the game very smooth, then I think 60, even 120 is the very good experience for a gamer.
Yeah, it comes down to the game you're playing. If I'm playing a first-person shooter, there's a Twitch-type game, I want 120 frames a second at a minimum and probably 144.
Right.
But if I'm playing, you know, World of Warcraft or Diablo.
Candy Crush.
Yeah. You know, 60 is perfectly fine. But understand, when you raise that frame rate and you're expecting it to be there, you need a powerful enough card that is able to actually render and produce those frames. But if you don't have a powerful enough card and you try to raise that resolution up and it starts stuttering, and it's not just the GPU, it's the system itself. But the GPU is the major element of what's going to determine your capability.
Got it. Yeah. I want to stick a pin in that and take a step back, because I was wondering if you could take us through like the landscape a little bit more broadly. Like, how is the industry divided between like consoles and cloud today?
To be honest, I think cloud is still relatively smaller than traditional, you know, gadget like a PC, like Steam, like a console or mobile games. But it has its value and supplementary role. For example, people enjoy the portability, you know, the smart design of Switch, right? So we work with Nintendo and bring a lot of really AAA games that are so hard to run native on Switch. And we put that in the cloud and convert as a video stream to the Switch users. People who want to play a game instantly, anytime, anywhere, but carry over and enjoy the game, that's how cloud can help.
Cloud has something very interesting, though, that a lot of people don't really think about. And that's the thing is, if you don't have the hardware on your phone or on a device to be able to show the fidelity of it, cloud can accomplish that for you. And it's one of the strong suits. Now, the graphics hardware that's in mobile and embedded, it's getting better and better and better. But it's not there.
Yeah.
And cloud is there and is capable of doing it. So it's not like a competition. It's using the right tool to enjoy the right experience.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. But again, the fundamental design of phone is to make a phone call or send a message, not just play video game all the time. So if you really want very impressive visual effect, but you want to keep your, you know, phone, the battery life long enough, like 4 day use, then, you know, kind of connectivity through the cloud is better. It's kind of, as I say, it's more like complementary role for each other.
But they have phones that are being made specifically for gaming now, right? Like my husband, he's always traveling with whatever console he has. And I'm like, wow, this is just so much to be traveling with. And I think his idea is like, I still want my console, but I just want it as small as possible. So like, do you think these gaming phones can replace that or no?
I think from performance and spec point of view, there's still some gap. And also these days, the console game make, to be honest, really bigger and bigger. Like for example, Red Dead Redemption from Rockstar. You know how large of the game? It's over 100 gigabytes, the full game. So even I use my PlayStation 5, I download about 6 hours to download the whole game. So think about your husband on the go. He want to play Red Dead. I said, sorry, sir, you're using a 4G, 5G network. It take you forever. On the other hand, your phone may not have another dedicated 100 gigabyte storage for that, right?
So the reason why you have such high space, you're doing physical-based textures, you're doing 4K textures, you're doing a lot of high poly, high count meshes that look realistic. But on a device that's a 6-inch screen, if I cut it from 4K down to 720p or lesser and let the device do the scaling, which takes almost no power, you can get them down to about 1 gig or less to be able to operate and have the fidelity that's actually good enough. And we know this because there are games that exist today that you can play like that. That's the core fundamental. How do you choose the right capability for the right device without hindering the experience? And experience doesn't mean beautiful. Okay, you'll find out in the games industry, it is about playability.
Yes.
That's key.
Yeah, and especially if you play MMO, yeah, then the network latency is also the key, because if your network sucks, always behind your enemies, you make wrong decision.
Tom, I know you've been digging a little bit into latency and how it's impacting like player experience. Do you want to walk us through some of the things that you found, and we can just bring Royal and Wesley into the mix?
Certainly, thank you. And it kind of goes back to what Wesley and Roy were saying earlier about playability. If the game doesn't run smoothly, it's going to fail. So when we're talking about latency, we're talking about delay. That tiny gap between pressing your button, clicking your mouse, or going on the keyboard, and something actually happening on your screen. So there's two kind of ways that the gaming industry has kind of put this together to kind of stop this lag. And it would be gaming infrastructure and cloud regions placed as close as possible to the end user. But there's also the other side, what we've done a little bit of digging to. There's what we would call routing and peering policies. It's always about finding the most efficient way to send and receive data from the end user to the game server.
Right.
Even if you're nearby, if your data takes a bad route, that proximity won't save you. For example, say your data going from Sao Paulo to Lima, that might go via Miami and Austin first.
Right.
That's kind of what we've done. We've seen in kind of with working with internet service providers before. So having these peering policies in place alongside that geographical proximity helps minimize any unnecessary delay. So that's kind of where we see it from our side and what we've been looking at. So Wesley, maybe you could explain a little bit more on how you're seeing that playability and the lag and what you're doing to stop that from the cloud side.
Right. So the two considerations, number one is the game server's latency to each player, and also a fairness of a geographic connectivity. For example, as you said, if some people in Miami, some people in let's say Seattle, or even some people in Tokyo, the matchmaking and fairness will be very difficult. How to allocate a good server and make everybody's equally kind of similar latency. That's a very important. Let's say you play the game this morning in New York and you take an airplane to LA, but you want to enjoy the same play experience. I feel more laggy because I'm in LA right now. So this kind of balance, you have to make happen in the back end automatically and makes very friendly and fairness to a user.
Yep.
It's a lot of data that's continuously passing through to give that experience to your users, right?
So yes.
Like, how does the global content delivery networks, like, does that help with keeping the data moving quickly and reliably? Like, is there anything that needs to be happening in the infrastructure as well to make that even better?
Yes, that's very important.
So there's what's called a physical network and a logical network. Okay, the physical is where it's located, but guess what? Logically, it doesn't mean it's the fastest route.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised that if I try to hit certain areas in Asia Pacific, that a connection into San Francisco is actually faster than it is to connect to some different areas. Yes, you're talking about a single straight shot through the ocean with no other router points in between.
Yep.
And so in some cases, it's actually faster. That's a logical network. And then you have other things like peer-to-peer networking, where you're playing a game and you give up a little bit of your bandwidth, and you're actually serving pieces to other people at the same time.
Oh, interesting. Is that automatic, or is it like I'm actively saying, hey, I'm giving this up so that I can provide that for someone else?
Yeah, you don't usually get a choice.
Okay.
For networking, however, if I like to play with my friends and my friends are close by, I'll do peer-to-peer networking where I'm not using the cloud and I'm literally connecting straight to them. Sometimes it works out good, sometimes not so good.
And what do you think about that, the future of that infrastructure, Wesley? Like where we're at now and where we're going?
First of all, I think the age side, you will spread out as many city, you know, close to population, you know, as possible. But for large cloud or GPU cluster, power supply is the current challenge. So you see a lot of huge hyperscale who have their cloud close to the nuclear reactor or fire plant or solar energy factory, something like that. So some kind of good connectivity or broadband is very important to having the compute in far away, low energy cost place. But while most of people, when they want access GPU and AI, they can get very fast response.
And that's definitely a problem, I think, that everyone in the industry and not just our industry is facing at the moment, is that kind of power is at a premium, space is at a premium, GPUs are at a premium. It's kind of, we're taking off so fast. It's how is the infrastructure and everything going to keep up and keep pace with what we're trying to do and what the consumer wants and what that end user and the gamer wants at the end of the day?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, Royal, I have a quick question for you. When all of these gamers, like I think like millions at this point in time, they're logging in at once, how are these platforms able to keep identity and security seamless without like slowing things down?
Well, to give you an understanding, there's 3.3 billion gamers out there.
Okay. All right. So I was a little bit too low, not millions,
yeah.
Billions.
and so they have an account that allows you to kind of give a unique identifier. And that at least allows you to continue talking as you. Once you have that you've identified yourself, you get a token. And I don't refer to you anymore by who you are or your ID. I just refer to you by your token, because I know who you are. So that if you get disconnected and reconnected, you can go, hi, my token is this. And it goes, yes, I know who you are. You were here already before. But how do I handle millions of people crashing in at the same time?
Right.
If I'm a big company, I'm going to put an authentication server on the front to log you in. So then I can send you to one of the servers that you can play on.
Okay.
And you can find out how well they do the job when you see these big queues, like you are 6,000 in line trying to get you connected. Or you hear about these horror stories of they just crashing and people not being able to get in. And, and so that's it. It's a reality of what it is. But that's how they handle that onslaught of people.
Funny, you should mention that. And you say like 6,000 in the queue. Battlefield 6 came out on Friday. It's a big game from EA. It's kind of the sixth one in the series. And I was willing and ready to play it at 4 o'clock when it came out on the weekend. At that point, when I logged on, I was 274,000th in the queue to get on.
Oh my goodness.
These games are massive. You've got 700,000 concurrent players and they can't all go on at once because it would just crash. It would just won't work. So as we're looking into the future, we haven't really mentioned the big elephant in the room, which is AI. So maybe you could kind of give us some insights on how you see AI kind of helping the future of gaming, where it sits, what it's going to do. So maybe I'll go to you first, Royal, and then Wesley, I'll come to you afterwards.
So AI is very interesting. There's a lot of elements there. For one, think of it as the ultimate user-generated content that's actually done through AI and that capability, because AI is able to generate audio, it's able to generate video, it's able to generate 3D objects. It can be your policing agent, it can be your creative, it can be your companion, your storyteller. It can change the dynamics of the game. So now you're talking about a much more robust environment and ecosystem that's driven by AI.
Yeah.
That means you can go almost anywhere. Which, by the way, is a blessing and a curse, because where do I start is the hardest question to ask anyone.
Right.
Right. And from my side, I totally agree with Will. So the whole value chain from content production to distribution of game industry will all benefit from AI. You want to write a script for a new story, new game. You want to use AI create new costume, new characters, right? Use AI be your QA. Even like matchmaking and like promotion marketing, you will see AI everywhere. That's how, what we'll say, like game industry is always the pioneer adopting a new technology because we really love it and adopt it.
Right.
Exactly.
There is one key, funny thing. AI can create games, it can create all these wonderful things and content and all that. But you know what it hasn't really been able to do? Hasn't figured out how to create something that's fun.
Yeah, I've never thought of it that way.
Fair.
Making fun is hard.
Yep.
Right.
Emotion is still very difficult for AI to learn at this moment. So maybe 10 years, who knows?
It's super interesting. I mean, if you look at the Bartle taxonomy of a gamer, you have the four different elements of that. And that's, you know, your killers, your achievers, your socializers, your explorers.
Yep.
And each one has a different flavor. And getting AI to understand that kind of emotional response and balance. I mean, you know, as humans, we have a hard time.
Yep.
So yes, fun is hard and discoverability is hard.
Right.
I know obviously we're at the top of the hour, but if you guys have time, I have one last question for you. And I promise it's a fun one. And it's what I've been wanting to ask you from the beginning. So you two have been in this industry for a long time. You're gamers yourself. What games are you playing at the moment? And is there any game coming up that you're looking forward to play? For me, at the moment, I'm playing Battlefield and Ghost of Yoti. They're my two games. I'd love to kind of hear from your side what you guys are playing.
Finished off Borderlands 4.
Wow.
That was fun. And waiting for Ark Raiders to come out.
Awesome. Wesley, over you. Are you playing anything at the moment?
Yeah. So family, because my son is in the basketball in school, I play like NBA 2K 25, 26 with him most of the time.
Awesome.
And myself, like, I like some horror games, so I'll play, like, Capcom's, like, Biohazard. Enjoy the kind of air screaming light, shooting the zombies.
Yeah, Wesley, have you played Dead Space?
Yeah.
Tell me that's not amazing.
Yeah.
Ah, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, a good array of games there, and ones I've tried, ones I haven't. No, I'll have to add some of them onto my list to play.
Thank you so much to our guests, Royal O'Brien and Wesley Coe, for joining us today. It's been a fascinating discussion.
And thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the next episode of Interconnected, where we'll explore another exciting technology megatrend and how it intersects with digital infrastructure. You can find all of our episodes on the Interconnected YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcasts.